Bravo.
Yeah,
Bravo.
Stuart has no idea what you're doing.
I have no idea what you're doing, but it sounds fun.
It's very fun.
Hey everyone, welcome to Community Roots, a place where we gather in community to talk about mental health so we can travel the journey of life together. I'm Samuel Richards.
I'm Julie Richards.
And you might recognize his name, he's been on here before, but it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Stuart Palmer to the show. Thanks for coming back, Stuart.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm just glad to be back.
So we started a conversation a little bit ago now on psychodynamic therapy, and that led us to a conversation about the unconscious and trying to make sense of if we want to go deeper, if we want relationships that are deeper, we want to do maybe our own healing and growth and development, and we don't want to just stay on the surface, we don't want to avoid or deny or just distract and stay busy. We're looking for more depth, more quality. And part of how we might get there is through exploring sometimes what's going on underneath the surface and on the unconscious. Mm-hmm. So let's go there today.
Okay. Sounds fun. Sounds interesting.
It sounds like an adventure. That's part of it is I love about psychodynamic therapy that it is exploratory.
Mm-hmm.
It is, how do I get to know a person, including myself, so I'll say self and others, on a deeper level, where maybe one of the aspects of that is what's going on relationally and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And one part of psychodynamic that we've discussed before is paying attention to the affect.
Right, right.
Can you describe for us, Stuart, what that is talking about?
Affect sometimes is kind of seen as, well, that's emotion or that's mood. But generally, affect is kind of understood as kind of an overarching way of talking about mood and emotion, because affect is kind of an external expression of an internal emotional state. I mean, in other words, and the way it's expressed is in nonverbal. It's verbally expressed, but it's expressed in nonverbal ways, like tone of voice, body movements, facial expressions. So affect is expressing emotion. It isn't, but it's not just simply emotion. It's an expression. It's what we describe as a way of knowing what internal state a person's experiencing.
If you're spending time with someone, what does that look like? How would we be able to notice and track that someone is kind of giving us a window or a portal into their internal world a little bit? Like as we pick up on our noticing and being more present, which I think is a huge part of understanding the unconscious, because some of that is that we're not fully aware of what's always running in the background.
Right. Well, one of the ways is, of course, it's not just listening to the words that if you're sitting across from someone, you know, a friend, and you're hearing them share words and share phrases and share content, rational, verbal content. What may tell you more about affect is how the words, the tone of the words, or their facial expression changing, or their tone of voice changing. For example, if you've got a friend and they're talking about a conflict with a boss or something, and you notice that they're telling you about this experience, but then you hear and see her facial expression changes. She's more, she's crunching her face. She's tightening her forehead. She's looking serious. And then you hear her tone change. She's now sounds more angry. She sounds more upset. And you observe that she's moving and shifting in her seat. Well, what you're doing is you're getting a doorway into, kind of a window into, not just what the words were about, but how it, what meaning it may have for her, what meaning it may have. And that becomes a way of saying, oh, this has a lot of depth to it for her. It's not just simply the content of the words. She's got a lot of feelings about this. In other words, she's got affective indications that there's meaning to this.
And I'm glad you brought that up, too. And I'm glad we're discussing this. We did kind of have a pre-discussion a couple weeks ago. And so in my day-to-day, I've been perceiving these things, you know, in my life. And what I kind of imagined it as, working with a coworker who I brought up something and his reaction was kind of extreme. It wasn't something I was expecting. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like a Jenga block, you know, like you're looking for the loose Jenga block, like what's water off a duck's back? That's just going to be an easy problem that you just poke out, as opposed to maybe an affect that seems to be connected to the unconscious, like more of an extreme. So when you push that block, half the tower moves and you're like, oh. That's deeper than I thought.
Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect example of how affect really is the doorway. It's one of the ways that we get a kind of a hint at what is maybe happening unconsciously, that they may have assimilated your conversation. And like you thought, I was just going to talk about this one area and it would be very unemotional or pretty just basic. Let's just solve this problem. And then all of a sudden you see, oh my, look how emotional, and this has gotten really intense. And you get a chance to say, oh, there's a lot of meaning behind this.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whoops.
And that's unconscious. Many times people, when you're talking to them, they're surprised that all of a sudden something emerges in the conversation. And they may feel that the relationship is safe enough, but while they're talking, it's almost like all of a sudden this unconscious world begins to kind of emerge, and all of a sudden there's this life behind it, behind the topic. It's amazing how you can sit across from someone and be a close friend or just someone you feel close to, or they feel close to you, and they talk, and all of a sudden you're finding yourself emotional about something that they're saying. Mm-hmm. Or you're finding that they're emotional about something, or they're tearful, or they're angry. And it's one of the deeper ways we connect. It's one of the ways that I think we're kind of designed to connect, person to person. But it's not just connect by conscious exchange of ideas or conscious exchange. It's a deeper connection because we're resonating emotionally and experiencing something and having deep meaning.
I think that's really interesting and probably kind of hits on what Mom was saying earlier about the fun thing about this is it's exploratory. It may come as a surprise to both, but if the trust is there, or even like the understanding that it is deeper, then maybe it's kind of, maybe if you're not that close, sometimes I like to translate it into the business sense just because that's where I'm stuck all day. Just maybe even to say, hey, I'm touching on a nerve that's deeper. Maybe we both need to just go back our separate ways and then come back later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this is something that seems connected to the, something.
Right.
The deeper Jenga.
Yeah, the deeper Jenga. That's a good way of putting it. That's a really good picture. Samuel, that's really a good picture of it because it really can be like that. It's like you think you're talking about one thing or one focused point in business, for example, or at work or in other contexts. And all of a sudden, something completely unfolds that you would have never anticipated. Right. Oh, my. This has opened up some meaning and some feelings and some deeper unconscious dynamics that I did not anticipate. But we cannot go there in depth because we're in a work situation. Or maybe with a friend we could, but not in a work situation.
Which definitely, I think, speaks to the need for safety in order for that to emerge, that there may be a boundary there of time and location of where we are. If we're in a work setting, we're not going to go into the deep exploratory. We're going to keep it more to a business, less personal level. But if we are in the context of a safe relationship, a therapeutic one, those are places that we can be noticing, like, oh, something feels really loaded in all of this. There's lots of layers, lots of meaning, and it might feel at first tangled, confusing, maybe surprising, like, oh, I didn't expect that this was emerging. Or suddenly, you know, I often hear someone say, I don't know why when I see you, I start crying. Like, it's like their unconscious world knows that the space between us is safe enough to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it looks for that opportunity for connection and felt safety.
Right. I mean, that's a really important point, and really we articulated it beautifully, is that there is this, we're so relationally inclined, and our affects are emotional, social, they're social signals, and they're also perceptions for connecting, for really deeply resonating and relating. And so when the environment is right, or there's a level of safety, it doesn't have to be perfectly safe, but it has to be safe enough that our unconscious world will say, approach, emerge, approach, emerge. If our perception is unconsciously that maybe not so safe, then our unconscious world will say, limit, back up. Or our unconscious world could easily say, this is someone that you could maybe trust with something here.
So I have a question, because I was actually thinking over my memories here, and I think I might have actually had this happen where I was with a coworker. I think we touched on a topic that ended up being more sensitive than either of us realized, and he kind of got choked up. And in that moment, I just thought, hey, it's good to affirm. It's good to just kind of relate. I didn't necessarily want to overshare and kind of be vulnerable as well, but I wanted to focus on, but kind of how would you approach that situation, or what are good ways to do that when you're exploring and it's like, whoops, we just stumbled across this really big thing. Yeah. And now, how do you manage that?
Well, you know, I'll be interested to hear what Julie says, but the first thing that strikes me is, or at least is, if that happens and it kind of happens between the two of you, it's almost like, you know, like you don't want to avoid it, or you don't want to pretend like nothing just happened. You want to acknowledge it, but you can do it in kind of a empathetically curious way. I mean, you can say, something just happened with between us here, and I'm wondering what that is. But I also know we're on a coffee break. We only got 15 minutes. I kind of know that. But I can hear that this is very significant, and I don't want to dismiss it. But I know we may not have a lot of time to talk about it, but maybe I just want to acknowledge it and be curious to let you know that I'm not interested in just dismissing it.
Yeah, I think I would just also have that sense of, it would be important to not just shut it down and pretend it didn't happen, but yeah, it'd be more of like, boy, I can really appreciate that has some meaning for you, and I see that. And just a real sensitive, heartfelt, empathic moment between you that you can just say, oh, that sounds like this is really hitting on some hard things.
This is
significant. This is important.
Yeah. So maybe that makes sense, Samuel, what you're asking.
I think it does. And, you know, I guess part of me too, and I do like what Mom said, you might have answered my question, but because I didn't really want it to necessarily dive further, I mean, this could be potentially, you know, maybe it's a friend of a friend who's just really opened up in a moment, or just kind of had a moment of vulnerability or kind of emotion. And to even just like be empathetic in the way that you're seeing from their perspective, and you're saying, hey, that sounds difficult, or that's not, or like, it feel like I'm here with you and I can feel the pain or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have that boundary too, where it's not like, well, we don't have to go out to coffee and talk about this.
Yeah, you get to choose. I always love the affirmation, like, you get to choose who your safe people are.
Yeah. And so
whether it's a close friend, a partner, a therapist, whoever you know that can help you sort through and untangle different things that are bubbling up, that you can kind of in your own mind put a pin in it. And say, okay, I wanna spend some time with this because that really stirred up a lot for me. Mm-hmm. And then take that conversation to your safe places,
right,
so that you're not just everywhere you go. I wanna focus a little bit on the idea of transference, because what can emerge in any given moment between two people is our own templates of, you know, what we're making up about ourselves, how we see ourselves, how we expect someone else to respond because of how we've been responded to in the past. And so there are times that that kind of loaded feeling of there's different layers and dimensions going on in this room right now can be attributed to this idea of transference. So Stuart, can you help us
put some language
around that?
Yeah, well, you were describing it very well. You know, when we talk about the unconscious, I'll break it down just a little bit so that we can understand and discuss what transference is. And that is, there's a part of the unconscious that's called the pre-reflective unconscious. At least that's what I call it. And then there's a part of the unconscious that's called dynamic unconscious. And the pre-reflective unconscious is something is out of our awareness. But it was part of us developing these templates, as you put it, or these ways of interpreting that were established when we were really pretty young. And it becomes like an interpretive grid through which we look and assimilate when we experience relationships. And if you're in a certain type of relational exchange between you and the person, that part of you, that unconscious, pre-reflective unconscious, is always interpreting through that template or that emotional interpretive grid, what does this mean? And is this a threat? Or is it safe? Or does this remind me of someone? Or does this remind me of an experience I had when I was young? And so that's always going on. It's always happening. And in certain circumstances, you may experience an exchange with someone, a relational exchange, where something gets touched. Either they share a story and it touches a memory, or it touches something that you experience, and all of a sudden you're having a reaction. Like you're talking to a friend across a cup of coffee, and all of a sudden your stomach tenses up as they're talking about an experience when they had as a child or with a friend or something, and your stomach clenches and your mind gets fuzzy, and all of a sudden you're not feeling quite okay. And what's happened is whatever that was happening, it basically got in touch with some of those principles or some of those basic templates. And it kind of emerged affectively, and your body and your mind shifted because it touched something. And the pre-reflective unconscious means that we want to try to help people in therapy. We don't do this with friends very much at all. But in therapy, we would try to help them become aware of those organizing principles or templates or maps that is interpreting this experience that they're having.
So in a friendship or in a relationship, that can be, for instance, if someone is planning to go out with a friend and spend time together and the plans fall through.
Right. Yeah.
The interpretation can slide into, they don't want to spend time with me. Everybody leaves. I'm always going to be alone. and I'm too much, I'm a burden, I'm a problem. So we have these frameworks of how we see ourselves and how we interpret what happened in the relationship,
right,
so that we can at times be potentially always fearing that inevitable in our own mind. It's inevitable. This is going to happen. Even if the other person might be, you know, I just came down with a flu and I can't go tonight. It might not be that at all, but we've brought in our experiences, our fears, our, our other unresolved places that it stirs something up in us.
Yeah.
So the affect essentially connects to this template.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That kind of explains the extreme reaction. Something I was thinking of, maybe that would also, in a friend-to-friend example, maybe you're talking to a friend about a relationship, and you mention a behavior in the relationship, and then your friend immediately snaps to, oh, well, you know, just some extreme response, one way or another, right? Mm-hmm. Either they invited me to prom in a cute way, or, you know, they cheated on me with somebody else, and you can see both, like, snaps where maybe one person would be like, oh, that's your forever person. You got to be with them forever. And that's going to, or maybe the opposite where it's just like,
right.
There's no, it's kind of a black and white-ism. Is that, does that fit?
Yeah, it does. Because as you were saying a moment ago, Julie, these templates or maps or organizing principles, I mean, there's a variety of different ways that people use that language, which are not conscious, but they help us kind of assess, what does this mean to us, and what's it like in our experience? Well, usually they have to do with relationships, or they have to do with views of ourself, or they have to do with experiences of our own emotion. That's usually the way these templates are kind of, they kind of fall into those kind of groups. And they're very much established by our early childhood experiences growing up with caregivers and our own emotional environment. We kind of develop these, and these are profound processes unconsciously that help us navigate in a very complex world and help us understand what state we're in and help us monitor how safe it is, how unsafe it is, can I approach, should I avoid. It helps us stay safe. It also helps us survive. But they're processes that are very relational, and they're shaped by relationships. And you carry those into your adulthood. And sometimes we have those experiences like you described, Samuel, where someone, you mentioned something, and their response just seems, whoa, what? That seems a lot, or that seems like they're insecure, or they're opinionated about something. And usually it's because it's touched on some type of interpretive grid or some type of template.
So how does transference fit into this? Is transference taking those templates and applying them to situations that aren't the same?
Well, transference is, transference is happening in relationships all the time. I mean, it's just part of the relational sharing of your personhood with someone else's person, because you bring your history and they have their history. When we use the word transference, sadly, transference has been defined as something that happens, that language has been happens, that happens in a clinical setting. Because when we're sitting across from someone having a cup of coffee, or we're talking to a relative, or, you know, we don't use the word, well, that was a transference experience. I mean, we don't say those kind of things. What we will say is something like, now, this is more common. You hear this a lot. You'll hear people say triggering. This triggered me, or I was triggered by that. That's another way of saying this touched one of those places, and I interpreted, assimilated that and interpreted it, experienced it, and it facilitated a reaction based on my history, based on my struggles. So transference is, I bring those templates into every relational context. We may not call it transference, but I'm constantly interpreting what's happening in a relationship or in an environment. It may not even be like I walk into a hotel and I see something that reminds me of a hotel I was in 6 years ago, where there was a fire and I had to escape because there was a fire in the hotel. And I walk into the hotel, a new hotel, 6 years later, and all of a sudden I'm feeling anxious and tense and looking for the exits and trying to figure out where would I escape if there's a fire? Well, that's an example of a traumatic event, but it's also an example of interpreting an experience. And notice that that wasn't particularly relational. It was just an experience that we interpreted, and so we bring that to the experience. Does that make sense? I hope that makes some sense.
I think it also speaks to how we're wired and what our brain is doing to be very focused on survival, right, but also very focused on efficiency. So if it already knows a pathway that I've figured this out before, and this was the conclusion
all
I
hotels
made
that look like this will catch on fire. Your brain's like, I got you.
Yeah. Like there's this sense of I've been through this before. I've made sense of it already. And this even works when we think in terms of, you know, from a after someone has a stroke or they are in rehab, they have to relearn how to lift a fork and feed themselves or how to make their legs move to be able to walk or to stand. Like the brain is efficient enough that it says, I've already got you. I've got this figured out. I know how to do this. So it's going to use old tapes, old templates, even when they're not still serving us well.
Right.
And so
which
the work
sense
of healing,
otherwise,
yeah,
we would just be overloaded with thinking about,
with
you
too
know,
too many different like game plans or something. Like,
yeah,
how
my
do we
hand
know what
disappears
to do
from this video? And you're like, where did his hand go? Your brain has to reprocess and still
right
just like object permanence
all the time.
Yeah, and that's one of the aspects of the unconscious. The unconscious has this phenomenal capacity. We call it in neurological terms, we call it subcortical capacities to be learning and holding a lot of information that we're not even conscious of a lot of times, but it helps us, as Julie was describing, navigate in a complex world and be very efficient so we don't have to keep relearning everything. It's like if we had to start every day as if everything is novel and we don't have any history to bring with it, then we would really be we wouldn't
exhausted
survive. We would yeah, be beyond exhausted. We'd be overwhelmed continually.
Yeah.
So this is part of the unconscious benefit of our unconscious mind serving us. It's serving us by helping us connect with other people, determining if it's safe or not safe, but it's also helping us do things automatically so that our higher consciousness can address things that require us to pay attention in the moment or in the present. And this is one of the wonders of the unconscious. It's one of the ways the unconscious works.
It's like all of these layers are converging, right? Wow. There's the history and the context and the memory and the affect and all of that is loaded. And then there's prefrontal cortex ability to be here now at different levels, because we might be partially layered with unconscious dissociation, stuff like that, that's all going on at the same time. And we're trying to balance, how do I be here now? How do I notice what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what's mine, what's the other person's that I'm with, that's more about them and their world and how it's impacting me.
Mm-hmm.
Another area for us to lean into then, based on all of this, is repair.
Well, before you do, I totally get that. I'm with you. We should totally talk about the repair. But I did want to kind of bring up the example, too. Like, we're all on computers all the time. And I think it's interesting. I mean, and I'm in IT, so I got to bring up this. But just how what's showing on your screen isn't necessarily all that's going on. And so if you're having glitches on your screen, it's very possible something's deeper. If you've clicked something and all your programs crash, you know, then you're hitting on something deeper. I just find that interesting. And humans too. Sometimes when I'm driving, we've talked about this before, when I'm driving and I get cut off and I'm like, they must really have to use the restroom to cut me off like that. And you don't really have to like break it down necessarily that way, but just understanding like just because I was slighted there doesn't mean that's all that's going on. And what's showing on the screen is I was cut off. but what's going on might be a little bit deeper. Like
there's always more tabs open, right?
We're there
always,
you go.
We're always looking at all the 2,500 tabs or something, or all right. The files are always running.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good way of describing it.
Yeah. Julie, so let's talk about repair. Yeah, I'm digging
Julie?
It.
Yeah, Julie, what do we want to say about that?
Well, I love the idea of the plasticity of the brain and mm-hmm. the opportunity for new experiences. So we may have had a history of injury, of attachment dynamics. Maybe no one was there, or maybe there was a sense of people left and I had to figure out how to recover or heal or survive. And we're not destined to that for the rest of our lives. Like we have new opportunities. So I see like reparative experiences as I can learn something new and different. And then I also am thinking along the lines of when these transference dynamics come up where we realize, oh, this isn't really about this now. Mm-hmm. Then we do have to make those kinds of repairs in relationships. So I'm thinking on those two levels of like on a healing journey that we can have reparative experiences. Mm-hmm. And then on a day-to-day relationship, we're going to have to repair because we might have kind of had a disconnect of, you know, what the meaning was about in that moment. It might not have been what it looked like on the surface.
Right. One of the really wonderful aspects of who we are as human beings, and I think it's just part of our own constitution, is that I think we really are kind of built to flourish and thrive. We really are, to mm-hmm. become more fully human. And the way we're constituted and the way that has been confirmed for decades and really since the early 1900s is this profound and has been known throughout history is we're profoundly social and relational. And when we have relationships that are very, very nurturing and very connected, we grow, we develop, we really thrive. And why repair is really so important is if there is a disruption in an emotionally safe, attached, connected relationship, and there's a disruption either because of it could be for a variety of reasons. It could be someone's was insensitive or someone was harsh or there was an interruption, but something disrupted the connectedness between two human beings. One of the really critical factors is if that disruption happens, if we're able to repair it, then we basically help a person get, we can facilitate not only feeling in harmony with the other person, we can feel a calm sense of settledness, but we also may experience a sense of we're kind of moving toward keeping to grow. So corrective emotional experiences happen when we can repair something that's been disrupted. And disruption doesn't mean you have to have an all-out fight with someone, just a major, major confrontation or disagreement. Sometimes it can be so much as you're talking to them, you're listening to them listening to you, and all of a sudden they get real distracted. Their phone starts ringing and they're not listening, and all of a sudden they get completely off track. And when that happens, that can feel like a disconnection. Mm-hmm. And you can experience it personally as, well, they're not paying attention to me anymore. You can interpret it that way. Mm. Well, and that hurts, and that may feel uncomfortable. And so you can, you know, if you're paying attention, you can say, okay, something just happened with us. So could we talk about what just happened? And that kind of concerned me that you got distracted. Can we talk a little bit about that? And if you're able to talk it through and feel like you can hear each other, then you can reconnect, you can reattach, or you can repair something that got disrupted. So I guess that makes some sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I enjoy this, and I also enjoy ending on like a hope aspect too, like mm-hmm. kind of like Mom was saying, the two ways of looking at it, both in I have trauma that's attached to these filters, or I might have interpretations built on these filters, and those can be changed. but also in our relationships, like reconnecting and repairing is important as well. And, you know, just because we hit a hiccup doesn't mean that we can't. It's like, why do we fall down, Master Bruce, to pick ourselves up? You know which one that's from, Mom?
Of course not.
No. Do you know what that's from, Stuart?
I don't remember. I'm trying to remember.
It's Batman. I was curious if...
That's right. Batman. That's right. From one of the early Batman movies, and he's talking, to the butler. Or the dad of the butler say that to Bruce Wayne. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and sorry, I've got to test Mom every time there's a reference to see if she
just
knows.
Just to prove.
But just kind of that, like, sometimes those small hiccups and just the act of repairing can lead to a healthier relationship overall because you're just, you know, used to connecting.
Right.
But...
And helpful, too, to do the opposite of avoiding pushing something away, burying it, putting it in a closet to the point where everything is bulging out. And to circle this back around full circle is that it will continue to impact our relationships, how we see ourselves, how we see each other, because it'll be running in the background all the time because we never took the time to pause and make the repair.
Right.
So sometimes we have this whole built up experience of all these things that weren't repaired. And it's no wonder that we get our relationships into a bind and really tangled up because we never realized, had the awareness or presence that in the moment we're having disconnects that need a moment even of time and attention, of acknowledgement, of being able to hear and see and understand what just happened here.
Yeah.
And probably because you're developing a template right there, how you deal with the problems with your loved ones.
Right. Yeah.
It's one of avoidance.
That word you mentioned a moment ago, Samuel, filter. These are like filters, templates, filters. Ways of organizing and interpreting. So yeah, and it is interesting that people, because of we're so relational, people will try to seek to repair, especially in very significant relationships. They will try to see, are you receptive for us to talk about something that went wrong or something that was disconnected? And hopefully would be received. Like, okay, you know, something went wrong. Can we talk about that? Let's don't avoid it. Let's don't sidestep it. Let's don't push it away. Let's see if we can work with it.
And yet so many people are conflict avoidant, right?
That's right.
I mean, so it goes back to that, again, full circle of how do we create safe spaces where this person wants to see me and know me and understand, and not just towards me, but that I'm reciprocating that back, that I'm having this healthy attachment dynamic of allowing someone to be seen and known. And I'm doing that work internally with me, and they're doing that towards me. So it's that me, we, and you combination in relationships to be known, be seen. Yes.
Right.
Be able to repair. It. Yeah. That's the depth, right? That's I think to me what it means
the purpose
to be fully alive and to be able to connect with ourselves and with each other on this deeper level of what's really going on here, instead of always talking about surface topics or things that really probably don't matter as much.
Right. Good. Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think overall, even as a great discussion too, about opening up those deeper conversations and maybe talking about opportunities, or maybe even the, you know, as I was kind of going over some of the things we talked about a couple of weeks ago, how can it play into your day to day or provide a different perspective to what's going on?
Right.
But,
right.
Well, thanks so much for joining us this week, folks. Thanks, Stuart, for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Good
absolutely. I did want to take a moment to thank Alexander Wells for the logos, Steve Dodge for the music, Julie for being here and hosting the show, Sarah for her amazing kazoo work. Got a shout her out there. But if you want to reach out to us and start that conversation with us, maybe it does look a little deeper, feel free to email us at communityroots.pod@gmail.com. We've also got an Insta and a Facebook. So I'll throw all that in the show notes, as well as some ways to find Stuart as well. But we've hit the part of the episode where we're going to talk about gratitudes or affirmations. So, yeah, does anybody have any to start?
Well, I would like to thank my three adult children, Joshua, Hannah, and Abby, because they keep me on my toes, and they challenge me with my kind of grappling with my own blind spots and challenging me to kind of open my horizons and be a little more open to the world of young adulthood. They're in their late 20s, early 30, and I'm very thankful for them. I'm very thankful for them.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Mom, do you have anybody, you many children you might want to thank? No, I'm just kidding. What have you got for us this week, Mom?
I think I just love, of course, I love my children. Yes, absolutely. 1,000%. And I really love this work. I love the depth of exploring and healing and growing and becoming more aware, and that we get to do that in the context of community and safe relationships, and that we don't have to stay stuck, and we can flourish, we can grow and thrive. And I love that. Like, that to me puts so much meaning in life and in this work. And I guess my shout out is an appreciation to people who are willing to do that, because I know that not everybody is. Some of us don't know how, or don't have opportunity, or that's not what they're interested in. So I guess my people are the ones that do want to do that, and I'm grateful for them. So
I like that. See, now I've got to think of a less funny one than I'm just kidding. You know what I wanted to say actually is, I do think that part of your person is what you put into it. And I've been putting some pretty good stuff in recently. And so I guess mine is more of an affirmation, you know, that I'm feeling good and I feel like I'm putting in the right stuff. So I guess even to coming down these conversations that we have with Community Roots, I'm reminded, you know, we've put in a good 4 years of work on mental health, and at least in my own journey, I can start to see the muscles start to be built and the implications in my day-to-day. I say start to see, but it's really just in continuation and growth. But well, thanks so much for joining me this week, folks. We hope to see you next week as well. Thank you, Stuart. Thanks, Mom. Otherwise, talk to y'all soon.